Hello and welcome to Leave Your Mark. I'm your host, Scott Livingston, and this is where I explore the influences that have shaped the lives of our incredible guests. These are the stories of lives worth talking about. Follow me on Twitter at Built by Scott and Instagram at King of Pain, or link up with me on my Facebook fan page, Scott G. Livingston. My goal is to empower and inspire a community of people who take every opportunity to live a high-performing life. Before I get started on today's podcast, I want to take a moment to connect you with my sponsor, ReconditioningHQ.com. If you're in human performance today, you recognize that the industry has changed. Gone are the days of highly focused specialists who live in their isolated lanes, working without the understanding of the whole human being. The world of human performance is about integration today. It's about recognizing what your client needs to do to perform at their highest potential, discovering the parts of the puzzle of performance that need work, while keeping this person moving, training, performing, and succeeding seamlessly. Reconditioning is an operating system for this new world of human performance. The practice honors the role of each specialization and helps define the most powerful and tactical use of interventions that will make a difference. You don't take your car to the garage only when it's broken. You schedule for regular maintenance so that it keeps running smoothly when you need it. The human body is no different, and reconditioning professionals are those best prepared to keep the human body running. Check out our courses at ReconditioningHQ.com today. Follow our robust educational programming and become the reconditioning professional everyone wants to work with. Matrix Fitness is one of the world's leading-edge manufacturers and suppliers of human performance equipment. I am proud to have them as a sponsor of the Leave Your Mark podcast because I know they are dedicated to getting more people moving. Movement is medicine. All humans are designed to move. And if this pandemic has taught us anything, it's that we need movement more today than ever. Stuck in our homes, restricted from much of what we have done socially, getting physical by any means possible is essential. Whether you are at home and looking for equipment that will keep you moving, or you train people for a living, Matrix is there to provide you with the equipment you need to succeed and the advice to make it happen. Matrix has more than 500 products catering to the medical, fitness, and athletic performance markets. Matrix also delivers a wide range of complete programming solutions to build strength, explosiveness, speed, and agility in athletes of all kinds. In this last year, Matrix engaged performance coach Mark Fitzgerald as head of the Matrix Canada performance team to help you make the right decisions on your performance needs. For more information and a free consult, go to teamupwithmatrix.com/CA today. If you're part of the reconditioning community and you receive messages from the mailing list, you'll be aware of the fact that reconditioning has made some big changes in the last 6 to 8 months. If you're not part of that community and maybe you're seeing things on social media, you'll also have been noticing some of the social media posts around the applied neurology injection and other things that have been going on. If you're not aware at all, reconditioning really is a system for bringing the worlds of therapy and performance together, optimizing your practice, giving you an operating system for really looking at the human body and understanding where the issues are that are creating injury or limiting performance. And this system is now totally online and available to you 24/7. When you register for a reconditioning course starting this March, there will be an 8-week, once a week meeting that allows you to go through that material segment by segment. So you can watch it, then you'll have a 1-hour lab once a week. So it's not a big commitment where you can come in and learn more about that material that you just recently covered. It gives you a sense of accountability, a chance to check in and understand things that you maybe didn't understand, ask questions. And if you can't make those meetings, well, you can watch them recorded and you'll have access to future meetings if you want to come back, because those 8-week programs will run cyclically through the year. Reconditioning is going to do that for their R1 Foundations program and their R2 Designs program and the R3 Collab program. So all of the online offerings plus the live offering, the R3 Collab, will have these online labs that are supportive of the learning process. Really, It's very difficult in any course situation to be able to go in and take a course in a weekend or even digest it all online without some supportive means. So reconditioning has thought about this and figured out a way to help you get the most out of the program. And it's going to do that also within the construct of a community. So the community opens March 28th. If you're somebody who's hedging on reconditioning R1 Foundation's registration and you just want to see what things are like, it's $20 a month to be a part of this community. And in the community, you're going to get regular case study presentations, guest lectures, guest presentations, guest interviews, and Q&A sessions circulating through the weeks of each month. There'll be a calendar for each month that you can come in. And again, everything will be recorded and mounted on a web portal where you can go and access it anytime, along with a whole series of other materials that have been recorded over the last few years. So this powerful library of material that you can dive into, the ongoing connection in the community and networking might be the biggest part of all of this. The community is this opportunity for people to connect with other practitioners and professionals. And the really unique thing about reconditioning is it brings together the worlds of therapy and performance. So you've got literally people who are practicing athletic therapy, physical therapy, chiropractic, osteopathy, strength and conditioning, all kinds of different performance strategies. And everybody's doing got different angles on this material, and they're doing different things. So you get to learn from us at reconditioning, and you get to learn from the people and your peers and the community itself. So I really encourage you to get involved in the Reconditioning Revolution Mastermind community starting March 28th, along with taking the dive into R1 Foundations. If you need to take the next step, R2 Designs. And finally, if you've done R1 and R2 and all the neuro upgrades, then you can dive in with our next R3 collab September 24th, 25th in Montreal. And if you are an alumni who hasn't done the neurological materials, we have upgrades that you can dive into and basically bring yourself up to speed and gain all the access to all this online material as well. So really encourage you to read the emails, read the social, get connected, and we want to make sure you are the best practitioner possible. You can find all that material at www.reconditioninghq.com today.
Hello and welcome to Leave Your Mark. I'm Scott Livingston, your host, and today I have a good friend of mine, a strength conditioning coach for the Sharks in the NHL, Mike Potenza. Mike, welcome to Leave Your Mark again, buddy.
What's happening? How are you doing? Thanks for having me.
Nice to have a comebacker. We are sort of, there's a bit of an agenda to this podcast. You and I are hosting a big event in Mont-Tremblant coming up in just 3 months from now, I think. Well, it's coming fast in June 10 to 12 in Mont-Tremblant, the International Hockey Performance Summit. And you are helping me run a pre-conference with all the guys from strength, conditioning, and hockey. And we figured we'd get together and talk a little bit about this, but from the perspective of, what the professional development experience is about, and specifically going to conferences. And I think most people right now have forgotten what it's like to go to a conference.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be in person is going to be a new thing, right? So
we're going to have behavior rules or something like
that. Yeah. The debriefs at the bar are going to be pretty wild. Everybody's been bottling that up for a long time. So
yeah, I feel bad. Adam Douglas said to me the other day, who's speaking on Sunday morning, he's like, oh, this is gonna be good.
Get me in early.
We'll be handing out toothpicks at the door. Listen, along that lines, what's the first conference you remember going to in your career? And maybe just splinter off to that, which was, what was maybe the most impactful presentation at that conference that really struck you?
It was a conference. It was one of Perform Better's first ones, and it was four speakers, and I'm going to get three out of the four right, because I think it was Vern Gambetta, it was Mike Boyle, and I want to say it was Mark Stevenson at the time, and he might have been with Providence College Hockey, and there And I'm sorry, the fourth one was Steve Plisk. He was with Yale for a long time. Very smart, intelligent man. So it was in that New England area. Performed Better had a catalog. It was like four or five pages, right? And but Chris Poirier began to, you know, start doing these conferences, and I think I was 20 or 19 in college in Springfield College, and my advisor Margaret Jones exposed all her students to it, and she was also the department head for strength and conditioning, ran the bachelor's program and then the master's program. So I was like, yeah, great, I'll drive. It was like an hour or whatever, and went. It was awesome because we went with some of my peers, and you know, it was my first exposure to it. It was packed. It had like 200 people in it. You know, and then you're just sitting there in awe and I'm trying to write everything down, and they gave you a manual. It wasn't on your phone, most certainly, you know, you didn't have to download it on your phone. So
is this before you had interned with Mike or after?
Yeah, it was way before.
I
was actually in an observation. I volunteered my time in the gym with all the athletes, and I was a soccer player at college. So I was doing the athlete thing for men's soccer for Springfield College. And then I was also, you know, just staying in there to observe and get my observation hours. So then I could be like a student strength coach, you know, part-time student strength coach. So it was,
I remember going down to St. Louis in 1990 to do 90 or 91. It was the NSCA conference was there. I'd been to a few conferences before with the Canadian Athletic Therapist Association, but in terms of sort of call it the performance world, that was my first introduction to the National Strength and Conditioning Association. And it was this big thing. And being from Canada, like, you know, there weren't that many strength coaches and it wasn't an industry, you know, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, NCAA and all of these guys, you know, that are doing all this crazy stuff. And yeah, the guys from Nebraska and, you run into a Bill Kramer speaking and all these, you know, Plisk was there and these different guys who were kind of like the industry sort of, I guess they created the industry in essence, some of these guys, and have been there for a long time. It was an impressive event. And I think that's one of the things that really sort of kickstarted my career. I also ran into, I don't know if you ever met Mark Kling, who was the strength coach for the Chicago Blackhawks many moons ago, but Pete Twist, who probably was my biggest influencer in hockey in the early years, introduced me to Mark. And Mark was a ER doc, full blown ER doc, but loved strength conditioning. So he would ER doc at night and literally go to the rink and be the strength coach for the Blackhawks. And the next day,
most interesting part time, you know, either way you look at it.
Exactly. Who were some of the speakers when you went to some summits or conferences or that really struck you, that maybe shaped the way you thought for a while when you were younger and maybe still do now when you look back?
Mike most certainly has had a big impact on my career, also working for him and him giving me opportunities. I mean, him giving me the opportunity that he did was great for my career. We all love his information. He's obviously extremely intelligent and has been brilliant. So, but he helped me at a point where, okay, I was living in Boston, with my wife and, you know, we were trying to make it, you know, and he's like, well, I'll give you more hours to work for me. And found, I was going from BU to get my graduate degree. And then I was going to work for Mike, and I worked for Mike in the summers prior. So he always gave me the opportunity, which I think when we don't look at just the information that somebody's giving, there's some impactful things, you know, on someone's career and life, right? Yeah. Vern Gambetta was someone who, at the time, he was probably the biggest name, but it was 98 when I went to that conference, and he was doing the rebuilding and building the athlete. And that was very interesting for me because it put me outside of the, you know, weight room and strength and power based programming, you know, the Nebraska model or whatever have you, or Mike Stone's type of work. So that was pretty cool too, because it's like, okay, I gotta kind of evolve myself, you know. Probably those two were some of the biggest for sure.
Yeah, I was, I mean, we've talked about it before. I always remember going in 96 to Vegas and actually seeing, Gray Cook and Oh my God, Lee Burton, the first time they actually presented the FMS at a conference, and it was kind of like I was sitting in the audience, and I had been sort of thinking in this kind of way for a while, and I was just like, wow, these guys think about looking at movement, and it was really struck me and really changed my direction in my career. And you know, it's these presentations that we don't even realize kind of happen in front of us that strike us and maybe change our direction or change the way we think or make us kind of look at things differently. I remember running into Stu McGill one time at I forget what conference it was. It was a sort of a special sort of conference. It was done in Toronto a while back, and I hadn't never met Stu and went down and kind of watched him. And I was just some of the things he was doing with hips. I was like, wow, you know, I haven't thought of it that way. I have to think differently about things. Yeah. I like those moments. But you mentioned the network, sort of call it the networking op. And I know we've run the IHPS last 2 years, and because of COVID, we had to do it online. And a lot of people were, you know, loved the event, but they were frustrated with the fact that they couldn't be tangibly in the same room with somebody. And who was somebody you met at a conference that either took you under their wing, or you really struck up a friendship, or they helped, you know, maybe helped you directionally, professionally, where, you know, eventually you got a job op or something. I mean, maybe it's not that striking, but do you remember running into somebody or becoming connected with somebody just because you went to a conference somewhere?
I think it was a lot of the guys, to be honest with you, in the hockey world now. You know, like I remember attending it was a long time ago. It was like a SIG for NSCA, but it was a SIG for hockey. It was many, many guys there that are now retired. But Roger Takahashi was there, and I think he was somewhat new or young to the NHL, and Reg was there, and you know, guys like there were college guys there too. And I attended as a college strength coach from Wisconsin. Cal Dietz was there, and I think, you know, meeting Roger and meeting Reg and knowing that they pretty much just started, it was pretty cool. Like, all right, this is kind of where it can go, right? College, but here's the engagement of what the NHL guys are doing. It was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Matty Nichol was awesome because Matty Nichol and Mark Nemish, because at the time in Wisconsin, I had a couple players from each team. You know, I had a couple guys that had around Toronto. I had Ryan Suter actually that was Nashville's first round draft pick. And so I was communicating with those guys, and I always made it a point to stay connected with them and find out, okay, because I was curious, right? I was like, okay, what do these college hockey players need to go, you know, need to have when they get to the NHL, what habit we create. And, you know, I want a good reflection of our program. So I don't want to, you know, I just want to send them up to the NHL level. Right. So Maddie and Mark were great about that. And I reached out to a lot of NHL guys when I was at Wisco, whoever we had draft picks for. Chicago was a guy named Phil Walker, actually.
Yeah. I don't remember Phil. Yeah.
We'd drive down and see Phil and just kind of observe development camp, you know, and it was pretty cool. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, these kind of circuitous connection points that kind of, I think some people don't, especially I think younger people recognize it, but I think that's the value prop of going to these events, or these almost little micro atomic interactions that you have with people and where they go from there. You never know. Like I, you know, going to the Canadian Athletic Therapy Association conference, I would go and I would bump into, I'll always remember actually the guy who picked me up at the airport when I was going to Winnipeg, this is circa 1987 maybe, was Jim Ramsey. Yeah. So Jim Ramsey picks me up at the airport and he's driving the bus, you know, like, cause that's his job as a student kid and I'm a student kid and we're like, hey, how you doing? Da, 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 da. So we struck up a friendship. We kept connected to one another. And then when I got in the National Hockey League with the Islanders, I would talk to him at some conferences and things, and I started talking to him about some of the challenges I was having with the job. And then he reached out to me when they were going to make a change in the summer of 99, and you know, that helped me get a job with Jim with the Rangers for 2 years, and then I moved on, you know. So conferences, you know, that's one of the things about whether it's a professional development course or a conference that we don't always recognize is how we sort of bump into people and where it may take us, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, sometimes too, I think, especially if you're a young student, you're like, and you mentioned Greg Cook and Lee Burton, and I went to one of the early FMS certifications, and I was blown away, much like you were. And it's like you could think, oh, geez, how are they approachable? Will they have time for my questions? But they do. I've never run into – I've had those moments where I just walked up and introduced myself, and we spend, you know, a whole lunch just talking about things. You can make great networking connections there and you know, learn more, right? Mm-hmm. And anyways, I think you would agree, but like everybody from when I started too have been very inviting, you know. They are approachable, so you shouldn't fear that.
Well, one of the things we're doing at the summit that I think's really cool is you've got all the NHL and AHL guys doing some presentations on the Friday, and then I've got sort of a mixed bag of different people from hockey, but at different places, experiences, some are private professionals, etc. But I'm just wondering, like, when you first came into the league around that idea of networking with your brethren, so to speak, I don't know what your experience was, but I found when I first came in the league, it was harder to connect with guys. I think people, I don't think it was that people didn't want to connect. It just wasn't, I don't know, the knowledge base of everybody and who was in the zoo was different at that time in the 90s. And then it changed a lot. But I remember trying to help get us together, and, you know, Raj was part of that and Reggie was part of that. And we were kind of trying to congeal around an event and things. And I remember talking to you when you were first in the league about it. But tell me a little bit about your experience when you first came in, and who maybe sort of helped you, you know, who was in the league that you really had a nice connection with. And then how did that sort of spool up into what is now SCAF? Like, maybe people should understand what's happened with your organization in the last 20 years.
Yeah. I knew Matt Nichol, I knew Nemo. I knew them because of the players, like I mentioned earlier. Sean Skain was probably my closest buddy, friend, and all of the above. I mean, we interned together for Mike and worked for Mike in the summer times. And I first met Sean because he was finishing a spring internship at BU in 98. And I was going to be going in that summer as the intern, under Glenn Harris, and Mike was there just coming in and out for hockey. Right. So it was kind of cool. Like, so he was in the league with Anaheim. So those were my, then Phil Walker was also there in Chicago. So I knew a couple guys here. Right. And, but it was not standoffish, but yeah, there wasn't a lot of interaction in the way we do it now, you know? But that's, I guess that's just where it was. I guess everybody had more secrets back then. They didn't want to share, you know, but,
or at least they thought they did anyway.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Had it all figured out. But, you know, so that was kind of my first connections, you know. Then it just grew from there because Raj was, you know, doing a great job of getting us all together, and that kept going, growing, and here we are now, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really cool where it's come to and where it is now. You have a group of, some veterans, you've got a guy like Mark Lambert, who's from Quebec, or Lambert, as we say in Quebec, that's coming back, who just won a Stanley Cup, speaking, you know, you're speaking at my summit and at the IHPS. And what is the overall thematic, or is there an overall thematic of what you guys are trying to deliver on Friday? And what rock are you trying to move with the group that are speaking there?
Well, I wanted to bring a group together, but like you said, both in the AHL guys and NHL guys, because now you get a really strong perspective of, okay, is it different in the American League? Most certainly is, you know, there's a lot of different things. And, you know, what are the connection points or the conduits between the AHL strength coach and their NHL, their parent club there, you know, what's the communication? So there's going to be topics that it was the responsibilities of the American League strength coaches to deliver, you know, not only data and progress reports and things like that, but what are they trying to do from a habitual standpoint that the athlete is prepared for, right? And sense of development. There's, you know, Mark, I told Mark, I'm like, we'll talk more about in-season type training. What are you doing with your guys? And so we give you a perspective from the NHL guys of the day-to-day and what your thoughts are on the 82 game grind, you know, and all the moving parts of a schedule that's always changing, right? Then, you know, two two senior guys, I guess, you know, with Roger and Sean Skain, is I want them to talk about, all right, I said, why don't we talk about what it takes to get in the league? What lessons you would tell a young strength coach that are important when you get there? And that's mm-hmm. not an X and O's kind of conversation. That's more of, you know, your maybe what it takes from a character standpoint, what it takes from a communication standpoint, you know, things that mistakes they made and how they corrected them, mm-hmm. you know, how they got through different athletes. So I think that'd be really valuable because both of them have, you know, 20 years. I think they both are right at that 20 year mark, if not 21 mm-hmm. years in the league. That's a long time. So,
so ancient.
Like I said before, like,
you're getting ancient, buddy.
I think so. I feel like it. But like I said before, like, if you've been in the National Hockey League a long time, you know where all the good hiding spots are when the shit hits the fan. So you just gotta make sure they don't find your hiding spot. So,
and you know which rinks have the best food too.
The planes are the tough one. Something goes down in the air when you're going from city to city. So,
what is your favorite city to go to?
It's Boston. You know,
yeah, me too. I always love going to Boston too.
I grew up a Bruins fan, and you know, my family's there, so it's my favorite city. It's a good time. I've grown to love Nashville, you know, because of the country music and the scene. Mm-hmm. But it's fun. Favorite Canadian city is probably Calgary for some reason. I don't know. I like Calgary. I mean, the Stampede was always pretty cool, and I just like everything.
Not Montreal. I'm surprised. I would think.
I'm Montreal. We have great Stampede, but you know, we don't get there enough, but.
When you age out of the strip joints, you're much better now. You're too old for that now, buddy. When I look at your roster, one of the things that strikes me too is Stéphane Gervais, who, you know, for people listening, you know, came to the IHPS the last 2 years of running, and you know, he's done a good job of sort of just reaching out and connecting. Mm-hmm. Good human being, and it's kind of cool to see. You know, now he's the strength and conditioning coach for the AHL team. Probably, I don't know how he connected with Adam and with Dale and the team that's around them there, but it wouldn't surprise me that some of it came from, you know, being at the conference and connecting socially through the internet and stuff. And that's really cool. You know, I like when I see those kinds of stories. And when I go back to our lineup, we've got some, you know, some call it veterans in the lineup for sure. That's one of the things I try to do with the IHPS is bring sort of the older cats in and the younger cats in to speak about different subject matter. And you are doing something on, you know, speaking coach, which I loved you said to me, Scotty, we need to talk about this. So I'm like, so give the listener a little bit of an outline of what that means, like speaking coach and why you think that's important.
There's the, I guess the meat of the topic that I want to talk about. And when you and I discussed it, it has its purpose most certainly is to, when you're building reports, when you're giving information to coaches and management, you know, what does that need to look like? What kind of questions can you help answer for them? You know, and as the evaluator or coach, like what's important to you? Number one, we'll talk a little bit about like your training philosophy and how that's going to have to show in your work in the report, but also, what do you want to tell them about these players and what kind of DNA do they have physically? You know, are they projects? Are they physical specimens already? You just need a little bit of, you know, maintenance work or they just need to be involved in the program and they're going to be physically ready.
Mm-hmm.
I like the topic because I do like four different reports a year, you know, four different kinds of reports between training camp, exiting from the season, and then the combine report, and then my 20 game reports. You know, sometimes they're even more earlier cadence, like a 10 game report. So, so those types of things I wasn't prepared for really. You know, I was asked to do them early on, and I'm like, I'm kind of just writing these narratives and subjective information on guys. Can I give them something more concrete? So through an interesting experience 1 year where we didn't do so well, and our general manager, Doug Wilson, who's unbelievably supportive of what I've been doing for the last 16 seasons, you know, he kind of said, listen, I need this type of information during the year, you know, and I think it was year five for me. So I was like, oh boy, I think I screwed up. But it was like, it was more of a helpful lesson from him that actually made me better in my reporting and at least my cadence and what I wanted to show everybody to kind of have them not say, this guy's out of shape, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you've been in the league for a while, obviously, and you've seen a lot of changes. And, some of the guys and gals that we have speaking are talking about, language like, analytics and, different data points and, what some of the information we're gathering on people and KPIs and, of all this kind of terminology now that didn't exist when you and I were kids in this industry, so to speak. Why does that matter now? And what's into what you just talked about? How have you translated that technology into coach speak in some sense, so the coach gets where you're going with all this information that you're gathering all the time?
Yeah, there's a ton, and I think it's just going to keep coming. The tsunami of data that you can collect and the different KPIs are going to keep growing. But as a coach, you got to figure out what's the most important things. There's a lot of data points that we've collected, and I don't feel the need to share with our management or our coaches because it just gets too deep, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's very different than when I first started, obviously, with they just wanted to know VO2s or they just wanted to know body fat percentage and things like that, the other key point too is when you're having, and you would most certainly agree with this, when you have a return to play situation, you have to, with the coaching staff, it's important to kind of know how to speak coach in a way where what's our coaching staff style? What's their terminology? What type of things from a tactical standpoint do we have to weave into a final stage return to play? Do we want a guy who's a forward who has a lower body injury and he's back to skating and, we need him to be fast in kind of a back checking situation and also kind of an attack situation or a forecheck type of situation. So while we're working on sprinting, we can convince a coaching staff or teach them this is where this sprint is going to be important for them to come back because of our style of play.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have to skate laps all the time. And that's their kind of, their method,
mm-hmm.
I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The only tool in their toolbox sometimes when you're mm-hmm. a coach, right? So.
Well, you have one guy, Devin McConnell, and I have Adam Douglas in the IHPS talking sort of similar thematic around building a performance group for a team. And you've watched that animal kind of grow up too. And when I was a kid in the business, it really was medical conditioning and the conditioning side was this kind of neophyte thing that people were kind of get their heads wrapped around. You've obviously been in the industry long enough to see how that's matured and how both areas have matured. But what, in your viewpoint, is still missing in terms of building that sort of quality performance package where medical and performance work together? I have my own thoughts on it, which I'll share afterwards. But then also what... Where do you see it going in the future?
Yeah, I think you need an overarching, director who's responsible for both. Because it's probably going to be a assistant general manager or a director of hockey operations with the focus on performance. I think Tina Murray actually is someone who I've connected with, and I've followed Tina's work and heard her speak many times when she was at UConn and knew she had some hockey connections, a lot of hockey connections. So, but she's only up the street technically in Sacramento. So we talk a lot if she hosts a conference, she'll invite me up, and most certainly we do that, when we have our blood work conference in San Jose for her. But so I think that's where it's going. I think she's an assistant GM or has that sort of basketball operations title, a high level title overseeing it. And Ben Peterson, who was in the league for a long time and did some great research on hockey and skating and repeat sprinter ability, he's almost at that level too. And he's overseeing both, medical and also, on the performance side, the strength coaches for the 49ers. I think something else that's missing too, is just in hockey is this, the sheer number of resources. Hockey does the amazing job of giving someone a job title and then making them wear 10 different hats. Right. So, it's like, oh, by the way, you got to do this. Oh, by the way, you got to do this. Or, So I think that's frustrating at times. I think everybody in the league would sympathize with that, but you just need to hire enough resources. You know, don't dilute someone's skill set by making them do three different jobs, you know, at this level, at least. So,
well, I'm totally with you on both those points. And, you know, I believe you have to have that overreaching professional at the top who's got a good feeling for what everybody's doing. One of my thoughts, which I've shared with you before too, and it's kind of my mission is to, and that's what reconditioning is about, is creating a language of, you know, an operating system and a language of common practice so that people can speak the same language. And I'm going to do a presentation at the summit this year, just kind of bring that together under a case study. Because, and you've graciously invited me down with Jamie to talk at your bigger event in June with all of the trainers and the therapists and all this stuff. So I think that'll be really cool, but that's an important piece.
Yeah, that's going to be great for us, Scotty, when we can get exposed to your Kickstarter program, you know, quote unquote, for Reconditioning HQ. I think it's going to be awesome for us because it gives us a chance. That event is for us as our learning time, you know, and to do it together and to kind of bring in specialists that we want to hear and learn from, and it's going to be good. And now this is probably our second pre-conference type event with you guys. Kaiser Equipment Company did something, you know, 2 years ago. So yeah, we're excited.
Yeah, well, along that lines, it's interesting. I had somebody reach out to me who was a therapist the other day, and they said, you know, should I come to the hockey summit? And I'm kind of like, well, yeah, like we don't have a ton of lectures or presentations that are therapeutically centric, although mine's going to be Pete Friesen's doing something. Maria Mountain's going to do some stuff on mobility for goalies, which I think is very, you know, niche oriented. But this is for me, and I'd love to hear your viewpoint, but it's my overreaching, call it bone to pick with the medical industry is, yeah, if you're going to work as a therapist and return people to performance, then you need to know what the performance people are doing, even if you don't want that to be your niche of capacity, but you should be exposing yourself to, well, why are they training this way? What is a KPI? What does that mean? How can I speak that language? And sometimes people don't do that in that industry a little bit. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are too.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think in those situations, there are times when you don't function in a silo, if you will. Like, you know, the medical guys have their things that they're working on with athletes, and so do the performance coaches and strength coaches, you know, but there are things that just, they come together no matter what. And I think that's any soft tissue work or therapies in that, both parties have to know what's going on. Right. Certainly the second one would be the return to play. You know, they have to know. And, because you could get into a hairy situation if one party thinks that they're, or one party doesn't know what the other party is doing, and all of a sudden now they get closer and closer to practice, but yet they're not ready to do something. So yeah, I agree. You know, it's the nomenclature that has to be, you know, ideal and the same, but it's also times that you chat, actually, you know, the time you spend communicating.
Who are you looking forward to listening to at the IHPS and at your event?
You know, Mark is one I most certainly want to listen to him. Matty Price too, and he's those. I always try to pick their brains and ask for their secrets. You know, obviously they're very successful, but you know, Mark and I connected through Nelson a long time ago, and we just hit it off, right? And it was cool. So you can kind of geek out and have a bottle of wine and a 2-hour, 3-hour conversation on training and what they're doing and what they're thinking about. And Maddie's been amazing too. And we see him often and he's not that far away. So I think he's doing some great things with speed. Maddie put us on to Les Spellman, who's going to speak at our, SCAF and PHATS event, which is cool. Doing some amazing things with speed. I think that's a kind of a hot topic and how it translates into hockey speed. Right. So that'd be kind of cool.
Very cool. Well, I'm looking forward to doing this with you, bud. For those listening, if you don't know what we're talking about, the International Hockey Performance Summit is June 10th to 12th. SCAF, the Strength and Conditioning Coaches of Professional Hockey, are going to be doing an event the day before to preamble the whole thing, which is going to be spectacular as well. A whole group of really impressive guys are going to lecture there, so you can get in on the whole thing. There are also hot stoves, which we're doing again this year, which I love doing, the sort of internal or sort of more intimate conversation situations. And then we'll also have the socials, which will create the same sort of dynamic, I think.
We have to change it from socials to circuses because people have been bottled up for 2 years. So, so come to the circus.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. What, last question for you, just for the person who is more hockey centric in some sense, what do you see as the next thing in hockey, or where do you see hockey going now that people should be ready for and educating themselves to be prepared to do, and especially if they want to go to the National Hockey League and work in that league?
Yeah, I think there's some technologies that are driving where it's going to go, you know, and most certainly Catapult and some sort of, you know, external monitoring is driving that. The cool thing about that is they're at the point where you can really weigh out your drills or a coach's drills. So in a sense that we know what, you know, some sort of bilateral squat costs in our workouts, or you know, it's something, you know, proprioceptively enriched costs in that type of workout. You know, our coaches we're going to have the ability to help educate our NHL coaches at all levels, you know, assistants or head coaches, on the cost of their drills and how they want to stack the deck on their practices, which is great. You know, that's not telling them how to do practice. This is kind of the speaking coach thing too, right? We're not telling them how to do practice, but at least they know, okay, tactically we need to work on this, but this drill is going to give me our best bang for our buck for conditioning. I need this drill today. Or, you know, we're trying to, with Bob Bugner, our head coach, I'm trying to get a common drill that he really likes, because all coaches have their favorites, right? That is the most related to the game. You know, it's not going to be exactly like the game, but I tell Bob, like, just do that one drill every 2 weeks, and I'm going to look at the heart rate monitors, and then we know, because we can't monitor during games, right? So then we know, I'll just count the beats of recovery. So that's our conditioning test without having to get them on the line and just do some sprinting up and down or intervals, right? So I think that's coming, Scotty, or, you know, it's most certainly here. Some teams are already doing it. You know, they're looking at drills and the cost of those, and then you're able to catalog them, which is great. You know, that's awesome. And then, you know, the speed component, I think Maddie's doing a great job, and there's some technologies through 1080 motion, you know, with their sprint and their quantum, that you can really work on force production at whatever angles you want to. I think they're great. They're expensive, but at the same time, they're going to be tools that are going to be used more. So
cool. Awesome. Well, thanks for taking the time to chat today. I think this has been informative for the casual listener and informative for the person who is interested in coming to the event. And that was the intention of it. We're excited to run this thing and to get together and actually stop talking on this system, but start talking face to face. So thanks for taking the time today, Mike.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to see you at the circus.
I'm going to call it the circus. Yeah, exactly. Have a good one.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks for joining us today on Leave Your Mark. I hope we've left a mark on you today, and we wish only that you pay it forward by sharing this story, taking the time to rate and comment on this podcast. Please follow us at Twitter at Built by Scott and Instagram at King O'Pain, and become a member of this community at Scott G. Livingston on Facebook. Have a great day. Music by Cedric de Saint-Rome.